Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Germany, Germany in Washington. France, France in Moscow. These two symmetries describe the last 24 hours quite spectacularly. Ukraine crisis, but also the strength of Europe before the two allies and then antagonists of these last years, Russia and the United States. Allies in the 90s, and then the mystery of why we fell back into the conflict zone, reminiscent of the Cold War, but much more dangerous because of China. Mary Kissel, she is an executive vice president at Stevens Incorporated on Wall Street, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. I depend on Mary to give me a sense of proportion because she's traveled in all these rooms and she's seen the state presentation by France, the state presentation by Germany, the state presentation by Russia. And these are European powers of centuries practice. The U.S. is the newbie here. But we begin with the U.S. in a joint press conference with President Biden in these last hours. Chancellor Scholz of Germany said very clearly in English in response to a question in German about the U.S. and Germany working together. "We are acting together," said Chancellor Scholz in English. "We are absolutely united. And we will not be taking any steps. We will do the same steps, and they will be very, very hard to Russia, and they should understand." Mary, a very good day to you. How do you hear the new chancellor's remarks, given the questions that have been raised these last weeks and months about Germany's presence in NATO and Germany's presence in Ukraine conflict? Good day to you, Mary.
Good day to you, John. I think Chancellor Scholz didn't expect at all to be dealing with foreign policy to the extent that he is. In fact, it factored very little into his domestic political campaign. And in his press conference with President Biden, he was very careful not to say the words Nord Stream 2. And so the rhetoric on the surface sounded strong and united, that, as you said, we would act together. And yet, on the most important issue, which is the leverage that Moscow exerts over Germany with its energy supplies, the chancellor committed nothing. And I think that speaks volumes to the gulf that exists between Germany and the United States and how we view Russia, and also the economic dependence on Russia. Recall, just as the United States poured capital into communist China at the behest of both political parties, so too did Germany pour money into Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union. And the corporate lobbies that you and I have talked about in regard to China, well, the same exists within Germany as regards to Russia. And I think you saw that dynamic at play yesterday.
You mentioned economics, and I go right to it, Mary, because Germany's concerns are clearly not about weapons. Germany's concerns are about energy and the recovery of its industry, its export-dominated industry, from the pandemic. Russia continues, we're told, this is reporting, continues to throttle back on the natural gas flowing to all of Europe, not just Germany. At the same time, the French are saying their nuclear energy plants are not producing the amount of electricity expected. So there are price hikes throughout Europe, but there are doubts about Europe's ability to maintain its industrial and residential commitments, doubts, and Germany feels them sharply. Your measure, Mary, is Germany led by its economics more than its war planning?
Well, domestic politics, more often than not, informs the foreign policy views of democracies. And Germany has chosen to become dependent on foreign powers for energy in a sop to certain political parties within Germany, such as the Greens and others. Angela Merkel on the quote-unquote center-right, although, of course, she drifted left over the years, was no exception. She shut down Germany's nuclear energy capacity, by definition, making them more dependent on foreigners. I think it's interesting to see just in these last days, the United Kingdom decide to fire up more oil and gas platforms as they realize that they need to diversify their supplies. That's a very good sign, but that's also responsive to domestic politics within Britain, where Boris Johnson has suffered in the polls by not taking measures to liberate the British economy and to bring down energy prices and to attract investment. So, you know, I think it's very tempting to think about foreign policy in terms of grand theories and strategies and great men. But in democracies, it's also quite dependent on, you know, who's electing you and what their preferences are and what lobbyists are pushing on you. And I think that's particularly prominent in Germany, but it's also prominent, I'd add, in France, where Emmanuel Macron, as you said at the beginning of the segment, is trying to conduct his own bilateral tete-a-tetes with Putin. That has a lot to do with domestic French politics, where he is in a race with a renewed right, and he has elections approaching, and he wants to look like a dominant figure on the continent. Not saying it's bad, not saying it's wrong, that's a separate discussion, but I think it is important to recognize the influences at play here.
President Macron is busy, yesterday in Moscow, today in Kyiv, speaking with President Zelensky. So I'll begin with the Moscow conversation. We're told that it was 6 hours. We're also told that it included a six-course meal. Wonderful to get the cuisine of crisis. And we're told that the President Macron believes that he advanced the story of diplomacy. He advanced the story of de-escalation. The question here is, what does Macron intend? Why is he taking this bold move? He is running for re-election, but is he also running to be the leader of NATO or the EU? He's talked in the past about a European army. Is that a practical way forward for President Macron?
Well, the United States will always be the leader of NATO simply because of the size of our armed forces and our long dominance and influence over NATO headquarters. Macron has talked about a European army, but there's been no real money or effort put in place to put that into effect, and no real significant increase in defense spending. So that, I think, is merely empty rhetoric. I think what's unfortunate about Macron's trip to Moscow is that simply by going, he indicates some sort of split between the United States and France and Germany. And that's really Putin's aims, to weaken the Western alliance. He doesn't necessarily have to even, you know, re-enter Ukraine to do that. And in fact, Putin can play games all day long. In fact, in these last hours, he said, once the Russian military exercises with the Belarusian army are over, Russian troops will withdraw. So that, you know, again, buys him some time to keep talking and to try to extract more concessions. It's very clever. Instead of constant engagement and constant words that, you know, result in nothing, I think it's time for the United States, France, Germany, and others to walk away from the table and say, we don't believe you. You haven't taken any steps to reduce the threat against a sovereign democratic nation within our sphere of influence. And until you do, we're not talking to you. We're going to take every effort to fortify the Ukrainian forces, to come up with a panoply of ways that we can hurt you if you decide to upset the stability of Europe. Because remember, this isn't just about Ukraine, although, of course, the Ukrainian people were the ones most threatened. It's about the refugee crisis and the second and the third order impact on energy markets, on the signaling to other dictators and autocrats around the world. This is not just about Ukraine. This has significant implications, not just for the Europeans, but for us here at home, especially if you see energy prices and oil, you know, popping up above $100. That becomes extremely painful, especially in a time of the monetary and fiscal profligacy that we're seeing in the United States. That could become very, very painful for the U.S. consumer.
Now we come to Kyiv. President Macron in Kyiv speaking with President Zelensky. It's a striking picture of the two sitting in a wonderfully overdone room. It has elements of France, elements of Germany, the gold lace, on, the gold leaf on the doors. I note that the table is human size. You know, you could actually have a dinner party at this table compared to the table that was shown from the Kremlin, which looks like something of a cartoon or a scary movie with the two presidents facing each other over about 15 yards of table. So what we have from the conversation photograph in Ukraine is that Ukraine needs France's attention, and Mr. Macron is there to give it. But, Mary, France has no obligation to Ukraine. Germany has no obligation to Ukraine. NATO has no obligation to Ukraine. So what is the day forward? What will reassure Zelensky? What will reassure Ukraine, given that there are no treaty obligations if and when Russia does, again, what they did in 2014?
Well, we can supply assistance to partner nations all over the world without having a treaty obligation to them. And we do that all the time. We do that in Africa. We do that in Asia Pacific. We do that all the time. So it's a bit of a misleading question. I think the only thing that Putin understands is raw power. And therefore, these cargo ships that are flying into Kyiv laden with American and European arms are very welcome. I think that's great. I think those shipments should be doubled or tripled or quadrupled. The Brits and others have sent in advisors to help train up the Ukrainian forces. That's also very good. But we have many, many other tools at our disposal. We have vast cyber tools that we could deploy against Russia. We could launch an attack to give them a taste of, you know, what that might feel like. Of course, there's a lot of hesitation to do that within the U.S. government, and I understand that, because the blowback may be on the U.S. private sector, not on the U.S. government. So those tools do have to be used carefully, but I note them because they are very powerful tools. We have options to sanction the families of Putin and his cronies, to seize their property abroad, which is very dear to them, the vacation homes and the like. There are, of course, talk about financial sanctions on Russian banks. Now, that does hurt Russian citizens, but you know what? That's unfortunate. And, you know, when we have a conflict with another nation, it is an unfortunate truth that civilians do get hurt. We try to mitigate that. We try to minimize it as much as possible, but that is a factor. And European nations will be hit as well. As you've seen with China's efforts to punish nations that stand up for freedom, like Lithuania, but that's had a follow-on impact on companies that do business with Lithuanian companies. You know, the economy is interconnected. So it is true that we may have to feel some pain here to stop something that could be even more devastating, not just to the Ukrainian people, but to the economies and to our livelihoods here.
Mary Kissel, the executive vice president of Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. We move from Europe immediately to East Asia, the ongoing Beijing Olympics, and questions to be raised about this sudden pledge of alliance between Beijing and Moscow over Ukraine matter. What does it mean after the Olympics? I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.